Hello, everybody. Welcome. It's that time again for another episode of Pop Flash. We're going to be talking about the Blast Spring Showdown and the two teams that qualified to the Blast Spring Finals, as well as looking ahead to the PGL Major happening in Antwerp, run by PGL. It's going to be good. There's a lot to talk about on that one. So joining me, as always, will be Thorin and Richard. My two fabulous analysts, and obviously...
It's almost three sarcastic, the way that you were like, run by PGL. Should be fantastic. I thought he was...
We're going to go with this episode already.
Okay, fair enough.
I think you got it. Okay. Not leading anything, but definitely it's good. Well, let's just start with you, man. How are you doing? You had a good week?
Yeah, I'm all right in general. Yeah. I mean, obviously, yeah, I agree, fuck PGL, but I didn't know we were going to go straight to that. Fair enough. You know. I'm with you.
As an official co-streaming partner of the PGL event, I just want to say I think it's going to be a fantastic major. I'm really excited about lots of aspects to it.
Actually, it's that close though. Like when I keep saying people post, it isn't, is it? Like it feels like surely it's a month away. You know, I can't really process that. It's almost there.
But it's going to be interesting to see. You know, you're going to get proof of concept to see how some of the new wave of talent do in stadium situations. I'm sure PGL have got some, thoughts about how to do something, for the crowd and stuff. You know, that's one aspect of PGL that's always like super good. You know, they always do something like some form of live spectacle and plan their shows around that. And at the end of the day, it's a major. Everyone got their stickers this time, making the people that didn't get stickers last time
just probably annoyed. Yeah, exactly.
Just a needless punitive measure for no reason.
Why? I know.
Fuck your single financial windfall.
It was the biggest major ever as well. I don't get Mal. They're so weird, aren't they? It's so weird. Because every now and then, right, they do things that are legit, but then every now and then they have that impulse of the industrialist to just throw a couple of pennies on the floor and watch two bombs fight over it. Like, they do have that sort of sick, perverse sort of vibe behind them. They're like, go on, fight Nick and Nose, fight.
Yes. Well, I mean, come on, they do live on an island, I
guess. Yeah, it's a shame because it's going to be like this weird little anomaly in kind of the history of Counter-Strike. But it was a whole weird time. I mean, that whole major was kind of cobbled together and jerry-rigged. I'm sure this one's going to be a lot better. So yeah, looking forward to it very much.
Certainly hope so, considering this is a new location for PGL. That always adds difficulties, because you need to just be there so far ahead to make sure that you nip everything in the bud before you get live. I hope that PGL are going to be able to actually do it and actually be there.
What they were like in their fucking home base, mate. So in their home base, they didn't have player cams or fucking like basic like things like someone saying in Richard's ear what we were doing. So like, jokes aside, like that actually is my one main concern about the location. Is if people don't know, one of the weirdest parts of what went wrong with Stockholm, to me, it's the most unnecessary part, is that story you told, Richard, about how the reason the sound was like shit on stream till somewhat like the second to last day or something mad like the semis or the final, was because basically they didn't bother like hiring the guy who sort of came with the arena who'd set the sound up for you. And so they just thought like, well, we're professionals, we know what we're doing. And then they just sort of, it was like, if people don't know, it was a unique venue, so they sort of scoffed the sound. So
it's a globe.
It's a dome. Yeah, it's literally
stuff like that's globe, tricky though. So. You know, you can't just assume you can. This is what people don't realize. When we give credit to ESL for doing the sort of traveling roadshow, you're not just to go to the same locations again. They're not just doing a different location every event. Like, they go to the same places again and again and again, and the idea is they've mastered that venue. It's a skill. People don't realise it.
Not only that as well. I mean, ESL, they're going to hit a stride now where they just don't travel. You know, they've set up these, like, studios all at their home bases, and, you know, I think their plans to do, like, remote
Broadcast. It seems as the way to go in the future. That's the
It's more cost effective.
COVID caused a lot of considerations to be taken into account in terms of finance, in terms of like costs going into these events, and that's one way to cut costs for TOs.
But then again, that was like pre Saudi buyout, right? So I mean,
Now they can throw a $500,000 league just to look good, and nobody has to pay for it. It's fine. They got $1.5 billion.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what direction they decide to go in now, because obviously everything was geared towards doing these remote broadcasts in places where they've already got their best studio set up. And now obviously they can definitely add a little bit of sizzle to the steak. And I would say, and this has got nothing to do with the episode, but ESL have fallen so far behind Blast in terms of production. You know, I think they really do need to do something a little bit flamboyant, a little bit flash with that cash, you know? Or blood money, of course, but...
That could be the name of a new series. Or Blood Money, of course, with Richard Lewis and Thorin. Episode one.
Why did we
need
take
to justify the,
money?
The spend? This is where the metrics. We could have a whole podcast just on that topic because it's a loads of fun to talk about. But whatever, you need to be able to justify the spend and find the metrics. Sure. Let's take a look real quick at Blast, though, talking about one of the underdogs now because of this recent purchase, because, well, PGL also are just rolling in dough. Blast are certainly not. Blast have done some big investments, and so they're definitely in the red right now, and it feels like they're still playing catch-up in terms of TO, in terms of finance, in terms of being able to hang in there with the bigger brands out there. But they're still keeping their plan, and you know, going to home stadiums. They just recently announced that this whole thing is going to culminate again in the Copenhagen, you know, Royal Arena. So that's clearly becoming Blast's home turf. They've run several events there now. They know how it works. They know how all the tech gets set up. They know how to put on a show. And so it feels like they're really trying to make that the home turf to avoid any kind of snafus that could happen on the road. Kudos to them. I totally get it. I mean, we could have a debate about, you know, fans and interactions and all that sort of thing, but just in terms of being able to put on a good show. That's really strong. But we can go ahead and talk a little bit about what's leading to those qualifiers, what's leading to those events, and that's the showdowns. So American Showdown just wrapped up. The European Showdown just wrapped up. And I think we can touch on the American one real quick because we'll be probably spending a little bit more time on the European
South
one.
The South American one, Sam.
Exactly. The NA
what it is. Yeah.
They can't even make it past the first round. The semifinals are all Brazilian.
You think there's not a new depth to go to? This is amazing. And it's because even the MIBR team's there, for fuck's sake. I guarantee you, pause this episode right now, fans. You can't name all five players on MIBR. Even if you're Brazilian, I don't know if you can do it. Like, that's a little challenge for how many you got there. Put in the comments however many you got. I don't think you can do that. I think you can name all five. I can't. I can name like three, I think.
I couldn't
watch them play. They're just not memorable. That's all you need to know. No, because well, people don't know.
I might be out of my memory when they just fell off completely and it was all the roster drama and then.
Yeah, but that's why it's worse, though, similar, because it's not like, oh, the reason why all the Brazilian teams, it's because it was like, you know, two Americans played. It's like they all, it was American versus Brazilian and just all the Brazilian teams won. That's what a joke NA is now.
It's amazing. All right, Rich, what did you think of this? Did you have a chance to catch any of it? That's the first question.
Yeah, I mean, I was watching this. I think I even did a watch party for some of it. Look, for me, the big takeaways, and like obviously we're already getting into a greatest hits kind of area for we're doing on this podcast, because some topics are just going to be repeated over and over again. But I mean, like, just Evil Geniuses are just wretched. They're just absolutely wretched. I can't even. The wretched dung eaters of CS. It's absolutely unbelievable, like, how bad they are, how far they've fallen. And it doesn't feel like there's any... I don't even know if this is what rock bottom looks like for this team yet, frankly. I really don't. I saw, like, some news where EG was saying they're going to pick up, like, another two academy teams. It's like, well...
I'm gonna have you out.
Jokes like themselves, though.
Yeah, I know, exactly. It's like,
wow, do you need an academy team?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, no, but I mean, also as well, I mean, if they're thinking that's a long-term solution, like developing talent, it's like, well, sorry, you needed to do that 2 years ago then, realistically. You know, but I mean, just, there are just so many problems with this team right now. And like, you know, they got styled on by Godsent. You know, and I'm still trying to figure out.
So beat them in the RMR as well, I think.
Yeah.
So like, they're just losing everyone.
I'm still trying to figure out, like, what even is their map pool? Because, like, they're picking Overpass and they can't get 10 rounds on it. You know, they're like, it's so ridiculous, because it's like, I still think on paper, like, if everyone was playing at their potential, this is a team that can definitely be knocking on the door of the top 10 in terms of potential, in terms of where these players have been historically. But not one of them is anywhere close to their you know, full skill set right now. And, like, listen, best will in the world, Stewie has got to knock this eye gelling on the head. I've been saying this for years. I say it all the time. Back when he was doing it in Liquid, and then they brought Fallen in, and the team seemed to initially work, he replied to me, because, like, you know, I like Jake. He said, I'm never going to IGL again. You're right. you know, like the team's right. working now. And then the problem is he's got himself in that shock syndrome where he's so utterly convinced only he can fix the team, only he can lead the team, only he understands the game in its purest form, this kind of hubris. And it's just not working. Like, he couldn't even put up 20 kills in two maps against Godsent. Like, how much are you going to let your own games have some fucking pride, for fuck's sake? Like, you're Stewie 2K. You are considered probably the greatest product to come out of NA. You're like the most winningest NA player. You're meant to be like the legend, the upstart. To see him where he is now, it's fucking sad. It is sad. And he's doing it to himself, which makes it sadder. He has got to realize he can either be the show-stopping, entry-killing, you know, X-factor in a game, or he can be a subpar IGL with no stats. I know which one I'd pick. So, and the longer he leaves it, the longer he keeps on this, like, arrogant path of I will definitely be a top IGL and establish this team, it's going to get harder to get back to being a player. That's if he even ever could. And also, by the way, I just want to say, the way he keeps dangling Valorant out there when he's on streams and talking about, like, eventually I will move over and stuff like this. Okay. I'd mean, if I'm paying you, if I've just paid you to come in and rebuild a team and you're saying shit like that, and to be fair, some of those comments are from Team Liquid, but I would have real, real concerns about where this team is headed. So ultimately, I think EG, they looked like one of the worst teams at this showdown. And they just look like one of the worst teams. I mean, they're masquerading as a tier one in World Counter-Strike right now. No tactics, no direction, no firepower. It's garbage. It's been an absolute failure.
Okay. I have a follow-up question to this that I'm going to pose, but you know what else I find concerning? The fact that we're trailing Evil Geniuses in subscribers on YouTube, guys. You need to hit the subscribe button right now. We can't let that stand. Evil Geniuses, we just spent, what, like 2 minutes saying just that this is an untenable situation. Their CSGO, the fact that we're trailing them in subs is also untenable. So guys, hit subscribe, get on it, support the channel, support the content, and we'll keep it coming. But how much, when it comes to Evil Geniuses, how much do you think it has to do with the leadership, not only IGL, but coach? Because Malik is a hands-on coach. Ever since he's shown up in CSGO, he's been very much involved in the tactics. He's been very much involved in the leadership. He's had a vision for the team where he took G2, and then obviously he saw the results there. Like, do you think that we're seeing a conflict, a vision in terms of where this team needs to go and how it needs to play between Malik and Stewie, and whether or not Malik has any say in it, or if it is just all Stewie? I mean, I don't know what you guys think on that topic, but I feel like as soon as I saw that Malik was joining this team, I only saw problems coming down the line, because I feel like Malik is a hands-on coach and it would be difficult for them to find a way to stay on the same path together and still play a structured CS that he likes to play.
I mean, in general, I don't think that NA players, I find this across all esports games, I don't think they actually want real coaches who are like true leaders and try to be like the fucking guy who like essentially like makes you fix your life as well and sort of get your attitude. I think they just want, for real, they want demo analysts who have the title coach and who speak when they are spoken to. And when you tell this guy, what do they do on pissed around Overpass? He says, that's all I need to know for you, mate. Like, I don't get the vibe, unfortunately. Like, it's the same in League of Legends, loads of games. They don't want like the forceful figure. Essentially, the players want to determine how they play, as far as I can tell. It's just the NA approach. And especially this group of players, the EG players. Like, I mean, the reason I even forget there is a coach on this team is because this just looks like the players were asked, do you want to put together like a POG team? This is who they'd put together. Like, I don't get the vibe that this doesn't look like players who want tactical Counter-Strike or want to like change up what they're doing. In fact, I even get the vibe, if you look at who they've picked, that they actually really did. And this is why I hope this is a lesson in how bad some players' eye test is. I think they all looked at each other in their respective teams and went, it's all the other guys, not us. We're the real talent and we'll make a super team. And the joke is, they proved that they were the shittest elements of those teams. They were the worst players in EG and Team Liquid, and they've made a super team of shit. Just the worst players. So as a result, like, I don't think people get, like, the reason I have to put so much hyperbole is, normally we would say the same level of criticism if a team was just coming like ninth at big tournaments, but, you know, like, beat the lesser teams and then just can't beat anyone good. This team can't beat anyone. anyone, period. Like I was just saying, they've lost to Godsent a whole bunch of times. Spoiler, the whole window of Godsent being really good is actually like past now. They let go of Phelps, they're rebuilding. Like, they're not even the Godsent of last major. Like, and you're just losing to them repeatedly. I mean, even when you look at this showdown here, right? So they lost to Godsent. Oh, maybe Godsent. No, Godsent just lost to Fury immediately. Well, it's Fury. Fury, they lost to Pain. So it's like, so like you can't even, there's no angle where these are good results if you're AG. Then you look at the results, like Richard saying, I'll go further than that. When the fuck did EG ever actually go to like three maps in a good series? It's just garbage. Like, they are, they're a 2-0'd team. They're a team where they lose without even having close fucking games sometimes. People don't deliver in terms of the server. Like, you look at the people's performances, you struggle to find a player that looks like they're doing their job. And then, yeah, on the whole leadership angle, like, this is one problem I've noticed with certain types of player as well. I almost feel like this is why some of the entry fraggers want to go at being an IGL. If you're an entry, right, there are going to be moments, obviously, think of the role, where you might see an opening that if everyone seized on if everyone just went, followed up the second you said go, there might be an opening on the map that no one else would see because you're the entry guy. You're not the guy at the back to make a decision. You can see, oh, there's only fucking two people here. The problem with that is that doesn't happen 15 rounds a half, mate. Like, that, there's nothing there, mate. That's like a one-off call. That's an every now and then call that you might be totally right where you're feeling on, but that ain't going to help you. Like, I always used to tell people that who were like the stars who tried to do the IGL, like, that isn't what people like MSL are doing, mate. They're sitting doing really boring work where they're figuring out like a slight tweak on a strat that does sort of work, but they have to make it work against this team. Like, they're trying to figure out, they're not doing the things you guys are thinking. Like, they're the people who become the IGL like that, I think they really think it's an on the fly role, mate, and you just come up with shit as you, because, you know, we're all good players or whatever. Like, so I think that whole topic in general is actually like it's the fucking sensitive underbelly of NACS, which is they essentially live and die by the chemistry and the raw performance of the players. But in general, I don't think they want proper coaches similar, because the reason why I say that is my mate Zeus has now coached both Evil Geniuses and Team Liquid. And when the fuck do you ever hear them shout him out in interviews? When do you ever hear him point out? In fact, they'll even go out their way in Team Liquid, mate, to say that Adren is the best coach they've ever had. Someone who, as far as I can tell, is silent and just, like I said, just watches the demo and gives you the basic sort of scouting report. So I think they have a different vision of what being a coach is, to be fair. And this team, in my opinion, it's by definition, it looks like it was built by the egos of the players. And this is what you get if you let people have that control over the reins. Because the other thing about the Malik angle to me, Samuel, would be if I'm signed a coach like that, because I agree with you, if I sign that coach, I want him to have, like, even say in the roster, like, you know, he's going to decide if people stay, what roles, I want him to have loads of control. I don't just want him to be like a side character.
Mm. That's the thing. Wouldn't Malik, when he's coming off of G2, okay, so he managed to get through the whole Nico situation, right, where it was like him or Nico, one would go, it was a really messy sort of scenario, but they still managed to make it work. Do you think he would have gone to the next team and not tried to have that kind of control again and to say, hey, listen, you know, if I'm going to be the coach, I need to have some control over the roster. I need to have some leadership. And I guess that's just not happening at all here, or he's in that sort of situation where he may get
out. EG, if you have
tried to exercise that power.
Like, in G2, you've got Carlos, haven't you? If Carlos is on side with you, then you've got it. That's it. Like, he's sure. Sort of an owner, but I don't know in EG what the structure's like in that regard and what the expectations are, you know?
I'll add as well. I mean, like, you know, for Malik, it was time for a change. I feel like he'd had a pretty good shot, and he hadn't been, you know, they'd improved as a team, but he hadn't been able to get them where Carlos wanted to. But Carlos was very fair with Malik. It wasn't like he cut him out of nowhere. And Malik did seem to have a lot of input into the team and seemed to be very active. You could see that on all of the footage, all of the tape, all of the matches. You know, he's pulling out notes. He's doing this. He's doing that. Like, it's just not going to fly with NA players. I mean, that's like, Duncan's actually, for once in his fucking life, being too nice about it. It's a disgrace how NA esports orgs are run in terms of the hierarchical structure within them. You get these weird little enclaves of untouchable players. It always happens in NA. It doesn't matter. You can go through a period of like developing talent and having young players come through and all this exciting stuff going on. In NA, if an org is not managed, micromanaged efficiently at all times by adults, this is what it will always revert to. You will always end up here because ultimately, for whatever reason, there's this pernicious mindset in NA that because you have a level of aptitude at the game, that as long as you surround yourself with players who respect that aptitude and who you respect as having the same aptitude, it's all going to work. You don't need to practice. You don't need to train. You don't need input from a coach. What the fuck can a coach tell me, by the way? All right? And it always ends up here. Oh, and guess what? You know what? If it all starts going to shit, we'll just go and hide. We're getting paid. Who cares?
Maybe get the coach fired. Shout out Moses.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe we'll throw a coach under the bus. That'll buy us another 3 months of fat salaries. And meanwhile, of course, I got 20 hours on 2 weeks played on CS because I'm secretly having Valorant tryouts with all my homies, as we've seen with teams gone past. Not saying EG are doing that, but certainly that has been a feature of a lot of NA players that left for those supposedly greener pastures. And it's just ridiculous. Like, in good I understand why EG rolled the dice. Because they've been let down by another NA IGL and other NA players in the previous iteration of the team. I get it, right? But the original plan back then apparently was for Daps to actually come in and be an IGL coach. That never transpired. So Daps was in and out like that fucking Grandpa Simpson meme. He's put his hat on and fucked off. And then it's like, okay, no problem. I get rolling the dice on a Stewie team. But you needed a hands-on, you needed a really strong coaching personality, somebody that could reach Stewie in his mind to even ever have this team succeed. And from what I can tell, and from what I've heard behind the scenes, Malik's barely had any input into this team at all, and now might even potentially find himself on the outs.
Yes,
as rumors swirl, about all that, all the things that might be coming down from on high. It's just been a mess. It's like the EGCS Go project has got progressively worse. It's been mismanaged. I don't think it's any fault of the CEO. I think what you need is you need some sort of interim general manager. If somebody in the org like that exists, I'd love to know who it is, because they're not being very front-facing. I've seen Nicole tweeting about the standards that they've set for the CS team. Don't see anyone else doing it. And like, at the end of the day, if you look at all the successful teams and the structures, you know, you have to have a manager that can literally dedicate time to making sure all the things are in place. Players, conflict resolution, you know, our coach is respected. It's no coincidence, by the way, failing North American teams, that the teams that have succeeded in Europe are all the ones that have like ceded authority to coaches. Go look at it. Go look at the rankings. You know, if I was to list all the successful coaches from last year, they all got autonomy over the team. They can literally, like, think about XTAZ literally dropping the IGL, like, in the middle of a fucking tournament. Out you go. Your mind's not right. You're never getting that with an NA team. So, like, there's like a systemic rot in that particular scene. Like, it's like a weird cultural affectation where, in their mind, they're not sports professionals. They're still playing games. And I always think Europe's had that. That's one of the areas where we're super advantageous. You know, like, you can get a bunch of players and get them well drilled in a shorter time frame if you're dealing with European players, especially ones coming out of East Europe where it's a huge financial opportunity and things like that. It matters to them.
You motivation know. Is completely different.
Even, by the way, like, star players, like, if people don't know, the biggest success story that Malik actually had in G2 was the initial period he had with Kenny S, where basically he actually, like, managed to sort of get Kenny S on side. He was playing well again. Like, that's like one of the greatest players of all time. If he doesn't want to have to listen to a coach, he doesn't have to. But it was just taken for granted in G2. You do, because that's, I assume, again, from Carlos on down, there's the understanding that we've got a hierarchy. And the joke with EG specifically is you could even come in as the new coach, like me or Richard are talking about here, and go, right, guys, you're obviously not practicing enough. I've seen your hours on Steam, where the hours are. And then they could even go, nah, actually, I know it seems like that, but we actually do have secret Smurf accounts. We're just really embarrassed because our level's low. Like, shit, right. Right, no more Valorant, okay? No more Valorant. Coach, we don't actually play Valorant. Like, honestly, this is our game. This is our life. Holy shit, you mean you guys actually are this bad? And then I imagine, you know, Circle somewhere would just go like, kill. like alien shout, by the way.
Well, I mean, listen, Cert can't say nothing. He's one of the worst offenders at the moment.
He is. He's outrageous, isn't he?
I know. Like, for all we're banging on the NA players, like, Cert, for whatever reason, is toast in this lineup. He can't get knocked.
Yeah, he needs to be. That's why he's saying kill. He needs to get the flamethrower up.
Exactly. Now, it's ridiculous, you know.
That's a pretty bold plan, I have to say, for EG. Listen, I can fix your CSGO team, pulls out a flamethrower. Just give me 5 minutes with the lads.
No, I mean, it's just sad because, you know, they're not even like a top 30 team in the world right now. All that money that's been spent, the fact that NA right now, it should be a no-brainer that EG qualified.
Yeah, it's also easy competition too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the lay of the land, it's like, you know, and it's just sad because it is a legendary brand in our space. Sure, I always feel like a warmth. Like, I'm willing to forgive almost anything for those old school legacy brands from back in the day. I think it's great that you still have a Fnatic, even though it's been problematic over there, or a Mouse, you know, even though they've kind of technically rebranded and they're not Mouse Sports no more. These are like our legacy orgs. Like, these are like the orgs on which esports was built. And EG did so much across so many games. And it's like, I don't know. Maybe it's because they're too young to remember, but like, people would have fucking killed to wear an EG jersey back in my day.
Sure.
It meant something. It meant you were an elite level North American esports competitor in any pursuit. If EG wanted you, then you were legit. And now what they're doing is they're running that brand through the mud. You know, management have got to shoulder some responsibility, but man alive, like, it's just sad. Sad.
It feels like in North America, perhaps the focus is... It feels like a lot of the North American orgs that we've seen, and I think a bit of the COD teams as well, like Envy, et cetera, come to mind, where they're trying to, they've got their feet in two camps. They have the content creation camp, where we're trying to make a hub, you know, where we're trying to create this content and find these influencers and blah, 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 you know. Oh, but we're still trying to win tournaments too. And they're just caught between the two, and they can't make up their minds as to where they want to go, because that's the vibe that I had from this new Evil Geniuses revamp, was that they wanted to go down the content.
I mean, you notice, though, they don't even lean into that. That's also what's mad. Like, even though they brought... Like, dude, I can't even believe they themselves didn't put much effort into, like, it's sort of like the Cloud9 that won the major. Like, they haven't put any... The CSGO team, they've just let it play, mate. Like, because what I don't get as well is that, like, is they're not even sort of selling anything to do with the players. Like, I would have thought that's exactly a team where you'd be trying to play up the idea that they all have like friendly relationships, or they're all like cool guys, or there's got to be some angle to the team, for fuck's sake. Like, you're not even marketing them now. Like why would I be a fan of this team? They just lose games, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, and you've hit the nail on the head there, Semler. Like, it's what's, you know, the big problem in the kind of like North American paradigm is that 100 Thieves have been the successful model. If you want to create an upstart org that's young and make money and gain attention and notoriety, you have explosive growth. And they're not, you know, like, listen, I've got nothing against Nature, like, for real. Like, I like the guy, you know, had beers with him many times, cool dude. But I'll just say this, every time he opens his mouth and says, we're a trophies first dog, I can't, come on.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
You go to their website, the first thing that pops up is the fucking hoodies. You know, it's just in your face, boom, immediately, that we're influencers and clothing and lifestyle. And the esports is a conduit through which to reach a demographic to market those things. And that's all fine, by the way. That's your business model. But, you know, but too many of these North American orgs, as you say, they wanna wear both hats. And it's like, you know, what the North American orgs do way better than Europe is all the influencer shit, but what the European orgs do better than them is actually build successful teams, actually have like sports like infrastructure. It's why it's really sad to see where Complexity is, because Complexity are the opposite. They're trying to do it the European way, but unfortunately they just, their talent acquisition has been the problem. And I feel a large part of that has been Jason Lake sort of taking a bit of a backward step. Like
case with Complexity and Jason Lake, because you're the guy to ask on the topic. Yeah. Because I just recently saw the report, the financial report for Complexity, where they're just like 20 something million in the hole. Mm-hmm. And you're just thinking, okay, fine, growth phase. They're trying to build it up. We always hear this. Every Oregon esports pretty much is in the hole anyways, to a certain extent. But Lake, is there nobody at the helm now for Complexity that has the finger on the pulse in esports, or is Lake just...
Mike Messioso's at their company?
Yeah, they brought in Messioso to be that general manager role. I was just talking about what was absent for EG. But the problem is that Graham's come in at a time when they're also clearly making... like. What Complexity want to do right now is just hang in the pocket and see what happens in NA. Because, by the way, to be the top American team now, it's almost like last man standing. It's like the fucking end of Reservoir Dogs, you know what I mean? Like, for
even
real.
A good strategy, by the way, because the thing with their team is they have all the young talent. So they can actually, even though normally it should be the opposite similar, the joke is, if you're them, you just wait until you see who Team Liquid and EG kick in the next few months. Maybe you can actually just make your team with two pickups or something, you know.
Now, I don't think Complexity can be like, a great team with the lineup they've got now. I think that's honestly been reflected as well in the... In what happened at this event that we're talking about. They're sorely lacking in firepower.
They lost 2-0 to MIBR.
And it was bad. It's as bad as that sounds, mate. It was as bad as that sounds. But you know, at the end of the day, the budget there getting the same results as EG on, better results than EG actually, right? You know, they're doing it for a fraction of the price. And look, I've just got to say, they also did roll the dice. Like, Grim and Floppy are established tier one players. They're going to be fine. They're really good talent acquisitions. They are really, really good. The massive, massive upside. And also, by the way, if you ever do want to pivot to Valorant, both of those kids are fucking primed to go and be cracked in that game. Floppy's already had a go at it. But for me, there was too many question marks about this team. I don't rate JT as an IGL. I don't rate him as a player. Fang should have been great. He's struggled a lot recently. I mean, like, to put it in context, in this series against MIBR, like he's had a nightmare, mate. Like, he had 13 kills total in two maps. Like, fuck me. And you're meant to be the next big thing in NA. So I know it's like one of those rare nightmare series, and he's going up against MIBR players who are like, you know, they were really up for this. They really thought they could come through. But, you know, ultimately as well, you got Junior and an inconsistent AWPer. It's just too much. For Complexity to succeed, you need too much to go right. But these guys will be earning a pittance compared to the EG dudes. Like, for real. So, Complexity, just hang in there, wait for Liquid to fuck it up, which, spoiler, that's coming.
Inevitable.
They're not doing too hard.
I am inevitable.
I mean, they didn't even do anything this tournament themselves, so, you know.
They picked up the only 2-1 series in the entire first round in the quarterfinals. Liquid picked up a map against Pain.
Yep.
So there's that to go off of. I mean, Pain went on, you know, Pain went on to win the
there's
one.
There's no moral victories against Pain Gaming, Sam. Like, well, we got a map. Tell you what, when it lands. Next time we get him.
Hey, listen, no, I will say this. Like, we should talk about Pain winning
event. Let's take the time to talk about Pain real quick, because we are actually having to keep an eye on the time right now. And so Pain,
just 20 minutes of relentless EG
here. No, it's been like half an hour of EG, so it's like,
we can talk briefly about
Pain and their odds going into the main event. That's definitely something to look at, because to be fair, they had to beat Furia to get that spot. So that's not a team to be taken lightly. Furia definitely have some hitters on there. And so Pain coming in here, they get the one spot from North America in this showdown. What do we make of that performance?
I mean, listen, I'll say this. Like, considering how things went at the RMR for them, hell of a course correction in a short period of time. And they were staring into the same abyss that EG were kind of staring into, that if you don't step it up for the IEM Dallas qualifiers, if you don't step it up for this showdown, your season's essentially over until like the fuck, you know, till after the player break. Like, by the way, just to get back to EG, there's no more events for them to even fucking attend. They're done. They literally will be putting their feet up in Valorant. Now, the difference with like a South American team and a North American team is they're seeing that as a bit of a holiday and extended player break. Payne was looking at that like, there's, you know, there's no fucking way. And if you go and look at just the results across the last few qualifiers they played in, right, got them in front of me now. So, obviously, in this showdown, they beat Liquid, beat MIBR. Fury is the massive one. Fury are a top 10 team in the world. They pulled out a 2-0 over them. That's insane. But also, as well, if you go look in their Challenger League, they've beaten Godsent. They had a couple of, like, fairly easy best of ones in the IEM Dallas qualifier. So at the end of the day, like, Payne have like done what they needed to do to essentially keep their season alive, and there's potential there. I've watched Payne before. I felt this was a team that was going to go away after they lost Safe. Once Safe went to Fury, I thought there's no way Payne could be relevant. He was such a big part of what they were doing. But I'll just say, in Hardzow and Big Azera, that's a legit duo. That is a legit duo. Those are two, like, really, really solid players on this team that have, like, stepped up massively. In fact, Big Azera, best Azera. Fuck where Cold Azera is right now, right? Like, he's not even the best Azera in the Brazilian scene. So, yeah, I mean, like, I there's lots to like about this Payne game, and they've crept up to, like, 20th in the world by doing it on solid wins, hard work. I don't think they're going to blow the doors off or do anything amazing. They can't get into the top 10. But put it this way, I'd have this over any of the NA teams, probably.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as you say, it's not like it's just this tournament. Like, Fair Play Payne's been on the rise recently, which obviously was not expected because everyone thought it was just carried by Safe, who was now in Furia. But they've even beaten Furia, which have that player in. The problem is, yeah, if you have a look at this specific tournament, it looks like the biggest era guys have, like, the fucking tournament of his life. Like, that's not the normal fucking expected level. And then the other thing is, if you have a look, most of their players are actually older. They're, like, loads of them are, like, 24, 25, 27. So the downside of that is, it's not like a team of 18-year-old kids where, like, you know, oh, give them a couple of years, they'll be the next. They look like they're all right. They're doing all right. Like, one thing I'll say is I've also noticed there is a distinction to make, which is, I don't know where it is, but it's like somehow the ultimate position for a Brazilian team to be in, if you want them to reach their potential, is they need to be good enough that they get to an org that lets you, like, leave Brazil, maybe, and you can spend some time in NA, but you can't fully get into the train where you get hooked into the EG fucking carousel of loads of money and you're famous. Like, it's that sweet spot before then when the teams are good, because as far as I can tell, when you're not in that status, I assume it's like the guys in MIBR, you just practice, you just play like an actual professional. And by the way, at this point for you, it's still worth mega bucks. Like, it's still an enormous salary and you're in a great position. So, like, that's one thing I've always respected, right? With NA teams, they can be better than squads like this, but all you hear is complaints. You never hear any of the upside of, like, you've got millions of dollars, you can import any player. All you hear is all these downside, oh, practice isn't that good, and then I've got to play all these shit online qualifiers. All you hear is complaints. Then the Brazilian teams just fucking get to work, mate. They put on the hard hat and just go to work. And if one of them ends up being good, they go to the tournament. Like, I like that style, mate. That's the sort of people I like to cheer for. So even though this isn't like some top team that's going to do anything at the major, that's if people want to build me a storyline, give me that storyline over, like, this is a bunch of fuckwit 17-year-olds who think they're lit and have qualified to the tournament. Like, I give a fuck less about that, mate.
Yeah.
Fair point. Well, as far as them going on to the spring finals, they managed to snag that spot. Let's take a quick moment to talk about Ents on the European side before we touch on PGL.
By the way, I was thinking about this the other day, Samler. Think about how wild this is. If you want a real indictment of where Astralis the org is, consider this, guys.
Start us off.
Few years ago in 2019, Ents came up by beating Astralis, by playing Astralis in the major final. It was like Ents and Astralis were both top teams still in the world, right? Ents is a way better team than Astralis right now in 2022. How is that even possible? Like, if people don't know, you almost couldn't get a more, like, listen, Astralis isn't the biggest org in the world, but in terms of scope, they're enormous. Ents are nobodies. They're a little org from Finland. And even the players they picked up here are players nobody else wanted. These are players where the sort of bidding was like Sprout, Big, Nobody's there's no top teams. So like this is real GM work, by the way. Astralis has all the money and all the they in theory, if they'd played their cards right, guys, what shows that Astralis failed is the existence of Heroic. Those are the players that are supposed to be in Astralis right now if you did your job right. Then you look at Ents, like, how have they made this team? This team is way too good to be in Ents, but fair play. They pulled a miracle out, mate, making this squad.
Well, just before we talk about it, real quick, Richard,
it's worth mentioning that they are one of the very few organizations in esports as well to have done it on profit. As in, not taking in massive investment, not just getting flooded in and be like, great, we got so much money, let's spend some of that money. No, they've done it one step at a time, growing their brand, growing the market. I mean, they have a diehard fan base in Finland. Like, they've really done it well. So they are absolutely one of the orgs that I respect the most in esports because they've done it, air quotes, the right way, if you want to look at it that way. But
it looked really bleak at one point. No, I was just going to say, it did look really bleak for Ents at one point as well, like with all the Alu shakeup, losing Sergey, losing the finish lineup, plummeting down the rankings, you know, when you've been in a major final. So yeah, credit to them. No, what I was going to say was, I was going to get into another segment I know you like, petty grievances. Because on the last episode of this podcast, right, there was I'd said Copenhagen Flames, like, I don't feel they're like a real team. I don't think they're gonna like do well in this at this event, in this bracket. I think it's gonna be too hard for them to get through. Now, just to remind everybody, right? Yeah, they then went to the major.
Totally different tournament
with a totally different format, and they did get through in top spot. And loads of people underneath were going, this is Mrs. Copeland. I'm not even talking about that tournament, you mad fuckers. And then, right, it literally played out almost exactly as I said, like the bracket. Go back and listen to what I said.
The way it could be better is if after the last episode, they were all like, oh, at least he admitted he was wrong about Copenhagen Flames. And then now they were like, they lost in the bloody first round of this tournament, Richard. You fucking overhyped him, mate. Like,
I know.
That would be the only way it could be better.
Like, I mean, sure, I literally said that I don't think it can beat Ents.
Not even an egregious call either. Like, Ents is just better. I know, exactly.
Yeah, it's like, and that age, well, yeah, it did. I perfectly predicted the bracket. I said Astralis were coming up on form. I said the only thing that could maybe shake that up is like Ents have a shout of winning it. They did. I said if Heroic lose to Ents because Heroic are a train wreck, then, you know, that's a huge embarrassment and question. It all went down like I said. Like, what more do you want? Anyway, so yeah, Ents.
If anything, there's just the lesson that you can never please everybody and that you just have to keep on trucking, dude.
Yeah, well, I've been banging my head off that brick wall for about 20 fucking years. So, you know what I mean? But yeah, look, so Ents, certainly the most improved, overall in the world, the most improved team going into the major. Like, it's just crazy that this team, this squad, is up to fourth.
Oh, it's mental. I noticed that the other day. I was like, what?
Yeah, above. I mean, obviously,
look at the finals they're in. Like, you actually have to give them the place if you look how few tournaments we've had. Yeah.
And you know, look, it's not like some flash in the pan thing. It's been sustained success. Remember, it wasn't that long ago. They were in a final with FaZe, right? And yes, they did lose, but they gave a decent account of themselves. And they've really kept that going. And you know, they're above Heroic, who continue to falter when they're presented these golden opportunities. That just seems to be a hallmark of that organization. And I honestly think post-major, I think Heroic are going to have to shake things up. Topic for another time, probably. But, you know, the fact that they're above this, like, NIP lineup, above Astralis, who they beat, comfortably in the end, it's great. And they're doing it with players that, like, what I really like about the squad overall is that you have took a player like Hades, and in particular a player like Sphinx, who's posting these, like, outrageous numbers right now. Like, I would love to look, but basically, like, strip out the big three, you know, and then see where Sphinx measures up statistically for like the last 3 months. I bet it's crazy. But anyway, you know, so, and then you're doing it with journeyman players like Madden, Dicha. Who the fuck are these guys? Like, they've been in all these teams down the years. I bet they got a Liquipedia fucking page that looks like the fucking Torah. Just, you know, they've been on 5,000 fucking teams. And then you've got Snappy, by the way. You want to talk about journeyman fucking IGLs. It doesn't get more... Oh. It doesn't Yeah, it doesn't get more journeyman than that.
He's got more jerseys in his fucking cup of the Peacemaker.
I thought you were going to say someone else. I thought you were going to reference our friend. No, not bad. But Snappy, you know, like, I mean, like, talk about Last of the Summer Wine. And it's like sometimes in esports, you get these weird moments where, like, things that just aren't meant to work, it just all clicks because everybody gets it. Like, you know, when someone should pull up the tape about what me and Duncan were saying when they picked up Madden, and we were like, it's just another, he's literally just a generic fifth player. He's not going to add anything to the team. It turns out we were absolutely, you know, completely wrong. I mean, like, he was the missing piece of a jigsaw puzzle. I couldn't even see the corners to, but Snappy has assembled it. And put it this way, right now, to peak now, before you go to the major, 5 days out or whatever, man alive, like, Ents will do some damage at this major, for real. Like, there's so many teams I could see them actually upsetting that are meant to be in contention to win the whole tournament. So, I mean, super happy for where they're at right now, because to bounce back from the lows like this, incredible story.
Yeah, I actually totally agree. Like, what's funny is the only thing that holds me back from doing, like, a crazy prediction for Ents at the major, like, you know, they'll be in the semi-finals or something, is just the fact that they, obviously there's inexperience of the players. But even so, when they have been to LAN, even, you look at the last few, they're fucking mega. They actually are. Like, Sphinx is doing it on LAN as well, boys, if people don't know. Like, sure, if you were in a big final, the extra, maybe then I'll pick them and have a hard time. But, like, no, you're right, Richard. Like, realistically, this year, because the real problem people have is this year, because we've only had, like, a couple of lands, it doesn't feel like people have updated the narratives from the end of last year. It seems like people are taking way too many of those narratives and running with them. So, for example, people haven't realized, like, guys, this year Zemu's done nothing at all. He's nobody. Like, Nico's just, like, a pretty good player overall now that he's averaged out after that initial cat meets. Like, you have to realize the big names that we all had above the Sphinxes of the world, they're not there anymore. A lot of them have dropped down. So if you actually go and try and figure out now who the top 10 players in the world are, spoiler, Sphinx is on that list instantly. Like, he's top 10. Like, the question is, where is he? Like, your number 6? Is he number 9? Like, that's the thing. Just like Staun as well. Like, he isn't just now the best player in Rogue. He's absolutely like a top 5 player in the world. Like, we actually have to sort of update the rankings individually, as it were, because these guys have earned their spots. Like, they put in months of work now. And like I say, they're doing it on LAN. They're not just doing the online part of a blast and then they come to the... No, Sphinx is doing it right up until the final of Massive LAN. So, to me, I think the Ents team looks mega going into the major. Like, bearing in mind, they are a dark horse team. Like, as we say, not only in terms of the recent performance, but like, you look where the players are in their careers. Like, if they can get it together and there's not some like massive inexperience or someone just plays super shit, there's a world where this team, like, pretty sweet, top 8 would be the basic expectation if they're them, if you all together. And like I say, there's a world where you could be in the major semi-final, and that was unthinkable like 6 months ago. That would be ridiculous for this lineup on paper to be in the mix of a major. But that's where we are in terms of teams, because there's not that many top teams that are like big favorites for the major. And then, like I say, in terms of individual players, I know it feels like it's a bit early on, but with so many of the big names dropping down and then all this uncertainty about all the Eastern European players, there's a world where the Sphinxes of the world, their stock just keeps rising, mate. And if you're an Ents and you can hold on to a player like that, man, this year's going to be fun.
This major is the one where it's wide open. Like, Na'Vi had a date with Destiny in Stockholm. There's just no doubt about that. You know, it was the right time. You know, if we were in a better timeline, they'd be dominating tournaments now. But where we're at right now with all the uncertainty around what's going on with Na'Vi, obviously the now a unique set of pressures that the new Cloud9 are going to be under, Heroic, the perennial chokers, G2, where are they at, NIP, the device move hasn't worked out, Astralis, they got their guys, but like, it's still not quite clicking, and Zipnix is like, no, you will not succeed, like, and FaZe, as terms as a world number one, They're not a strong world number one. You don't back them to win every series. You know they're going to drop a map. You know they're going to drop a series. And they're going to be a bit blasé about it, a bit philosophical. So, listen, a team like Ents, they can come out of nowhere and really surprise people. Because this is, like, it might not be the strongest top 10 in the world in terms of overall ceiling. I think we had that at the end of last year with where Na'Vi was. But in terms of how close together all these teams are, remember, by the way, teams like Vitality aren't even in the top 10 right now. You know, it's like, and Ents are fourth. So, I'm telling you, this is like this is these are the ones where if you're thinking as an org, we're never going to get another chance to get back to a major final. We're never going to have that opportunity again. I'm telling you, crazier things have happened. Crazier things have happened. And unquestionably for me, we were dark horse pick. It's absolutely ends. I don't even think they're a dark horse.
Well, we can pivot into this, man, in terms of the timing of all of this, right? Them ramping up. It's almost as if the Blast Spring Showdown was just the qualifier for the major, you know, in a sense, because now they're going to be just going right into it, because we have to keep in mind that the Blast Spring Finals, which is what they just qualified for, is happening post-major in June, a month and a half from now. So a question of whether they're going to be able to maintain this form after the major and keep performing there, that's yet to be seen. But let's just go ahead and pivot straight into the major then, because we have a little bit of time left here before we have to go. So some thoughts on the major in terms of Ents. You know, do you think that they can actually carry forward in a best of one format? Because now they're in the challenger stage, so they don't go straight into the top. They have to still fight their way in. The first couple of rounds are going to be best of one. So do we consider that a risk for Ents, or do you think they're going to be able to lock it down going into this LAN environment where they can take these best of ones against teams like 9Z? They start off against 9Z. You know, against these sorts of teams, can they just lock it down and get the job done and move on to the next phase?
I mean, from what I've seen, Ents actually always looks like they have a pretty good map pool to me. So I actually think they'll be pretty fine in all scenarios. Like, there's another reason why I actually think they're a legit team. Same with Furia, by the way, is this isn't a team where it's like, right, if everything aligns, they can get like a good team in a 1v1 if it's the right map. No, it's like, actually, you can throw these teams like Ents and Furia against any team in the top 10 and they match up almost similarly well. Like they'll be in the game. They can get favorable maps. They can definitely play. Like, that's one of the other things I think is impressive about squad. It's why, like Richard said about the Snappy angle, like Snappy is not just incidental. It's not four fraggers and then he just stands behind him and goes, good. That's what I told you to do. Like, he clearly is the one who likes, has had say in bringing these players in and how the team's structured, like what they want to do. So to me, like, I think he's integral. I think that's actually also a sleeper part of the team that people aren't realizing is normally when an underdog team comes up, even the IGLs are nobody or an underdog, and he has to learn and he has to get experience. Think of Nefani. Like, one of his problems is brilliant caller, but he's still getting his shit together. He's still getting his reps in. Snappy's been there. And crucially for me, he's even got that last detail, which is cool as fuck, which is he never got his big major run with any of his teams. His teams always had their peaks outside of the majors and it would just be for a month or two. This is a chance right at the end of his CSGO playing career to have maybe one of his best teams and do like a big run. Like we're saying, like the way is almost clearing with all these problems in elsewhere, and then people are, they're not taking their coaches, and then people are getting fucking, then lineups are all going to shit and haven't come online yet. Like, it's almost like the way is just parting for this guy to make some like amazing, like I say, like a semi-final run and then really cement himself, because I don't think this team's going to have any problems. Like, in my opinion, their problems will be the stage, and maybe if you play like an enormous opponent, maybe you play like a Na'Vi or something in a big match. Aside from that, against all that is, that this is the sign that they're not just like a flash in the pan to me. If they play someone below them in the rankings, I take them to win heavily.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll also add as well, like, there's not many teams I would feel comfortable going all in on a for a best of one, but I think like Ents are so competitive across so many maps, like I don't know. I feel like almost the best of ones can play in their favor. I think they've been given a massive gift by playing 19. No disrespect to them. They've done incredibly well to already get to the major, but Ents will certainly have been thanking the CS gods that that's the team they get to play first, because, you know, you're going to see a mismatch in terms of overall skill. But also, let's be real, this is like, this is a big deal for a couple of these players on this Ents team. So you want to get those nerves out the way, and you're essentially playing a team with even less experience than you, and certainly, you know, the whole weight of a nation on their shoulders in a very different way. So I think Ents, honestly, like, you know, the best of ones in this format, I think they're going to come through unscathed. I mean, like, there's, I can't imagine a world where they don't get through to the next phase.
Okay, so we have Ents. We're very confident in their abilities. What I want to do now is I want to ask you for an upset team in the challenger stage. Who do you think is going to be able to get in here that you wouldn't otherwise expect? And is that something that you guys have put some thought into going into this major? Because there seems to be, you know, quite a bit of attention, obviously, given to teams like Eternal Fire and Bad News Eagles, a lot of hype around them. Do you think these are going to be able to do well here in the challenger stage, or are we looking at somebody else?
Bad News Eagles are an interesting team because it's like it's the big Cinderella story coming into the major. That's the one everyone's really hopped up on again, obviously from Kosovo, you know, and it's great to see the country's, you know, leader meeting with them, congratulating them on social media. It's a big deal, you know, where they're from. And again, some of these players, like I said, it's hard to believe they're so young because, like, when I was looking it up the other day, you know, like Rigon, the Swiss player, it feels like he's been around forever and he's like 22. It's mad. It's like, it's crazy. I feel like that name has been there on these lineups for such a long period of time. So again, sort of similar. There's a little bit of overlap with the Ent story in the sense that this is a group of players kind of coming together and leveling up just before. But for me, the Cinderella stories end, you know, like there's always a cutoff point. And I think Bad News Eagles and getting to the major, I feel like, you know, listen, best will in the world. I can't pick them as a dark horse, put it that way. But that's the one I know a lot of people are leaning towards that because of the current form. For me, it's very hard to, like, in good conscience, pick anyone out. The one I would probably lean towards, and it might be a bit naive given everything that's been going on, but maybe Team Spirit.
Okay.
Maybe. Although, I don't know, I feel like probably there's a, you know, a whole unique set of problems. But, you know, when they did just enough in the RMR, they got very favorable opponents, it's got to be said. But I do like the team. I look at the talent on this roster and I feel they should be better than they are, you know. Dexter is still a phenomenal player. Magix, obviously. Chopper back in there. You know, like, I feel that if this team can just click, if it can just get a couple of, like, early wins under their belt, they could be, like, the surprise team in this. I mean, I'm probably thinking of, like, Team Spirit from way back when.
I've got an angle for you, Semler. I'm going to take Forza. And the reason why is, A, I've always thought the reason that team continually rises to the same, like, sub-tier one level repeatedly is because if people don't know, Jerry, their in-game leader, just seemingly cannot ever play for any team that isn't called Forza for some reason. So as far as I can tell, I think he's way overqualified to be in that team. Like, years and years ago, when people were like, but there is no one after Zeus. Like, he was the obvious person that should have been probably been in Na'Vi or some top team like that as the IGL. But as far as I can tell, he can't move on. He's just like a lifelong Force player. So I think he does like a pretty good job, actually. I've noticed he's had totally different talents repeatedly year after year after year, but he keeps getting them to the same level. They always have some good fraggers in there. So he's a good talent scout, it would appear. And then on top of that, I'll also throw in as well that, like, this particular major, if you are a team like that, this is your world championship, this phase of the major. Because if you can actually do some damage at this major, you might actually be able to get the last fucking helicopter out of Vietnam, as it were, and maybe actually keep playing professional Counter-Strike, which is what's on the table if you're from that region right now and you're not a massive name team. So you might be able to be the last one that gets picked up as the min-max team, or you might never play Counter-Strike ever again at this level. So to me, there's also an added factor where, like, if I'm them, you just go all out. You forget about any future tournaments. This is the tournament. This is tournament for my life, basically. I'm going to go ham as a pro. And again, if you want to just like an outside, like a dark horse that people will look past, they won't expect to be the, this is a classic one. This is a team that in like a qualifier will fuck someone up every time, you know, in like round four or something, where the team, they're looking past you to like, oh, I'm going to play like, you know, I'm OG in the semis. Like, that's the team that whips out a cheeky 2-1 and beats you. So bear in mind, we're looking at BO1s. In the first round, they play Renegades. So that's already a potential 1-0 if they do a good job. Like, I could see a team like that sneaking out. I actually think in the challenges stage, it's one of the ones where I can go the other way. I think a lot of the big names potentially could fuck this up because it just looks like such a crapshoot. Like, you've got like big names who aren't necessarily that good, and then you've got all these like no-namers, but like maybe are better than the name, you know. So like, I think this challenger stage looks like ripe for some upsets, man.
Oh yeah, dude, this like you say,
Liquid don't make it, for example, just pulling one out of the hat.
They could start 0-1, absolutely.
You could start 0-1, and then you're down in the dumps where you're going to be playing against teams that are legitimately dangerous. And you can't even manage to...
By the way, this is why I don't like the fact that Valve, for some reason, maintain some sort of like intra-major cycle seeding system. Because I'll give you an example. Like, how can Bad News Eagles play Eternal Fire in the first round of this tournament, but Team Liquid plays G2? Like, I'm sorry, I don't care what ranking system you've used. It doesn't make sense. Like, that's broken, whatever that is. Because it's not like Eternal Fire, some top team. Like, what are we doing here, guys? Like, this is nothing. The premise here is, right, if you just did like a reasonable ranking, even if you had the teams bloody rank them again, like, that could never happen, that matchup. Come on. Because in the BO1 one, it's the most important, remember. This is what people don't get. The actual first game of the Swiss is the most important, because that sets, like, the directions and the whole fucking Bucolt Scott. Like, that's the one you got to nail.
Yeah.
A lot of pressure on them there.
But yeah, you're right, Simon. I'll say this. You don't want to start 0-1. Like, for real. Like, because it gets too dicey. And the problem you've got there is, by the way, I will just say this. That Liquid G2 game, that's the one you want to watch. That's going to be the one that's going to set the tone for what version of G2's turning up to this major.
Very good point.
You know, what fucking dark magic has Nyholm worked that his team gets to play a Mongolian team in BO1? Like, what? What? Meanwhile, if you're complexity, you just get vitality. Sound, what? Some of these matchups are what?
I know. They're like, it's. I mean, we haven't even talked about that team, have we? We haven't even talked about IEC.
No, not really.
But, I mean, you know, what a mad story that is as well. You know, all the Cinderella story about, you know, a team from Kosovo definitely will apply as well to them. But yeah, you're right. Obviously, the Astralis, very fortuitous. They should come through that one relatively unscathed. G2 Liquid. Like I say, if G2 lose that... And it's not out of the realms of possibility. Things could get very, very dicey very, very quick. But I also agree.
Is G2 going down? Not making a cut?
I mean, listen, I would back G2 to win. But what you got to remember is, like, if you look at, like, G2's, you know, kind of form coming in at the RMR, I don't know how much of a good workout they got. They looked. So I watched their games. I watched them play against Anonymo. Which they lost, best of one, fair enough, happens. But I watched them on my stream play against that German team, Sangal, dog shit. They were dog shit. 16-10 doesn't tell the full story there. They threw so many rounds, looked really, really dicey. And then, yeah, all right, they beat Astralis, but come on, like, I mean, you're G2, you should be beating Astralis. And by the way, that came down to an overtime on Vertigo. So... Nah, you're not getting the best G2 right now coming into it. And they've got Liquid and they're clearly nervous. And don't forget, they just had that ESL Pro League season. And also, a lot of these teams are coming in with way more table time. They've played way more maps, way more games. So I'm telling you, like, if you want to see a match that is ripe for an upset in the best of one, that G2 Liquid game, for real. Like, Liquid can definitely do it. And I don't even rate Team Liquid.
It's
not that you meta, is it? You just say something at the end, you put a line in that, like, amplifies the whole thing, like, and I don't even fucking like Team Liquid. That's all ramped it up at the end.
That's how sports punditry. I thought, I taught you nothing all these years, Duncan. Right? What you have to do is you go one way, then you offer a counterbalance, and then inflammatory statement right at the end. That's how it works. Come on, your boy Skip Bayless is the master of this shit. So.
I love it. This is why, you know, you never know what you're going to get. I really appreciate it. Well, guys, I mean, as always, it's been a terrific time. Thank you very much for taking part and for sharing your opinions. And, well, everybody, thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're still looking to catch up to EG again. Get on that button. They can't be ahead of us in the subscriber count. We have to be ahead. Come on. So hit the subscriber button. Be sure to drop a comment as well. Be sure to share on YouTube. I'm pretty sure that's how it works right now with the algorithm. If you can share it. That obviously helps pump it up. But thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll see you for the next show. It'll be coming up in just about a week or so. We'll have the next Pop Flash. So we'll see you then.